kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast, landmark episode number 613.
Oh, shit!
Giant-sized anniversary issue.
We made it, everybody. It's we made it to 613. Happy 613 day, guys. How's everyone doing?
Yeah.
It is a party cast. Cole's here. Tim's here. Chris is here. Pernell's here. Everybody's here. How's everyone doing?
Now it's party time.
This is the Monado's power.
Oh, in jokes.
To anybody, then they need to play Xenoblade Chronicles, because that should be everyone's joke.
True.
True.
But
they're in jokes that were established, like, 5 seconds before they record.
I bought, like, the art book version of the Definitive Edition, and I have neither cracked the art book nor played the game at all, so that is true dumbassery on my part, but...
I couldn't find it.
Yeah. Like, I originally played it because our friend from the UK, King Will, brought over a copy for
royalty?
Me and and imparted it to me in exchange for him staying at my house for a few days, which was very nice of him. So I did not exchange money for goods the first time around. I played it like 6 months before it came out in the US and I loved it. So now I have actually exchanged money for goods. I don't feel bad about it. I really love that game.
I have exchanged the money for goods 3 goddamn times now with Xenoblade.
you've had royalty staying in your house, so if anything, that's what you should be rambling about. That's the stuff. How'd you pull that out?
It's Nintendo, it's 3 versions of one game that they were never going to sell in the States to begin with.
They got over it.
Now the Wii, 3DS, and Switch.
And Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
I skipped the 3DS version, though, because that just didn't... I mean, I guess if someone really wanted it and they didn't have it on the Wii, that's one thing. But in my mind, I was like, it's just not... I wouldn't even enjoy it on the 3DS. It was just too much screen bloat.
I'm gonna defend it a little bit, because I did buy it. It actually looks really good in the stereoscopic 3D.
Hmm. What about the screen bloat? Did it not... Like, were you, like, okay with that generally? I mean, obviously you enjoyed the game, but...
Yeah,
Have seen there being any potential for improvement on the way they laid out the display?
No, it actually, because I didn't really like having to use the wand and nunchuck like thing. So I actually really liked the because they simplified the controls to like a real controller, which is what they did with the Switch version too. So I actually quite like the controls better.
Oh, no, I wasn't saying the controls. The controls, I could totally see being better on buttons versus the dongle and schwip. I'm saying just the
dongle and schwip.
I'm just referring to just the UI, because even on the Wii and I guess also the Switch, it was a very busy screen. So with the 3DS version, of course, they had to scrunch it all down. Even with the 2 screens being accessible, it was still a smaller display overall. So, yeah,
I guess I just kind of got used to that. It didn't bother me. I will say I do remember the like kind of learning curve of the menus, but it's not as bad as many of the other games I've played. So, and I mean, I feel like, I don't know if it's necessary. Like there's some things in some aspects of that game that I'm like, I don't know, I could do without this. But then I'm like, I must get this.
Oh yeah, that game is the king of that. The side quests alone is like, I don't need these, but you're like, I gotta get them all done.
And like affinity things, I don't even look at the affinity screen because I'm like, I don't want to look at this because I need to move on. It's been 4 hours and I haven't moved from this spot.
I think that was the game that made me realize I just have to say fuck it to getting everything done in RPGs sometimes. Like, very early on in that game, I was just like, yeah, no. It's like, we need to rebuild settlement, whatever it is, the sector. I was like, do we, though? Do we? Yeah, Colony 6. I'm like, no, I think we'll be fine here. You're good. I'm going to go do other stuff. Thanks.
I'll tell you something. I rebuilt Colony 6. I didn't even feel like I did anything. Just
see?
Spent a lot of time.
Same dark fucking
kicking really boxes. Kicking boxes.
It's just another way of like them throwing you into another fetch quest, and then when you know you're like, I have enough money and items, and then you just choose improve the place, and then it just instantly happens.
I think the worst thing about it was that, you know, there's that general concept of, okay, you complete a quest, the box gets ticked off, and you move on. But the way this game did it a lot of the time was like, okay, you go to the guy, he's like, I need 5 berries to make this pie. You're like, okay, you go hunt down all the berries and find them on the ground. And you run at the guy, give him the berries, like, okay, tick the box. And it's done. And then immediately another box comes up over the guy's head like, okay, now that we're baking the pie, you got to distribute the slices to 10 people. It's like, what? Just stop asking me shit. Just stop.
It's funny that you say that, because A, it's true, except for the monster fights, which you can stack, like you could just roll, you know, like stack 5 of them deep and then just like run out there and hunt for exclamation points. The other thing is I have a pie right in front of me right now that I'm eating.
Time to distribute those slices.
I know. Now I feel like it's a successful quest.
We can definitely do this.
Oh, jeez.
That was pie time.
There's a debate in the live chat about the 3D on the 3DS.
Well, hell yeah.
Sansthesis is saying, I've never met a human who actually used the stereoscopic 3D for more than 30 seconds the first time they turned on their 3DS. I did, by the way. I love the 3D.
And, me too.
Rupier is my jam, saying, I love 3D games on the new 3DS, which I will agree, the new 3DS with the head tracking, that's how it should have been from the beginning.
I genuinely question if it may have been just my glasses or something, that because like I couldn't do it. Like, I couldn't get into the 3D.
People are real sensitive to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I knew it would be fine for me because I could play the Virtual Boy for as long as it took. Like, I beat a couple of games on that system, and I was fine. Never had a headache.
So you played the entire library.
I played all 2 games. Yes. No, I played hours of Mario's Tennis. It's not Mario Tennis, it's Mario's Tennis for that one. Just for that one particular game, it is Mario's Possessive Tennis. And then I beat Wario Land twice, because that is a fantastic game. And the thing that got me the most excited about the 3DS when I first started playing it was a little indie platformer, Mutant Muds, because it has a wonderful soundtrack, and it basically is the gameplay of Wario Land. And so it was utilizing the background and the foreground. It was so good to play in 3D.
But did you make it through Super Challenge? Because holy fuck.
No. But I pre-ordered the Atui collection, which I think Limited Run Games is handling. And that's all the games from that same developer, all on one 3DS cartridge.
Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah, and I pre-ordered that. So once that comes in, I'm actually going to give it another go, because I have Mutant Muds and Super Challenge both downloaded, of course, but it'll incentivize me to do it again.
I'm not going to lie, there was something weird about like Super Challenge, where it's like, I still think the game is fantastic, but there was something about the first one that kept me, I think maybe because you had those few upgrades. There wasn't a lot of upgrades in the first game. There were a few.
Three.
I feel like
specifically
three. It was like, I feel like maybe that was what pushed me to want to keep going. Like, this game is fun. I can't wait to see what my next thing will be, but Super Challenge is like, fuck you, just don't die.
Did you unlock Grandma?
Oh, of course. I did everything that game had to offer. I loved it. When I got the Super Challenge, I was all ready to go. Like, I loved the first game. Can't wait for Super Challenge. And it was like, nah, we just made it hard.
I really feel like that game was just like, you know, more of the same. Like, for people who, what do you call it? Exhausted all of the content of the first game, but still love it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we both hit that note, though. I think we both qualified for that.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, like, I think I brought this up on the show in the past, but I think I'm a genuine sucker for games that allow you to unlock and acquire new... Hey, you jerk! Yeah, just, man! I'm a genuine sucker for games where they kind of give you more to unlock to kind of expand on the game, even if it's superficial shit. It's just here's something you earned. Keep going to earn something else. I guess it's technically the base of the Skinner box. So in that regard, there it is.
So for $12, Mutant Muds, what do you think?
I think it's a solid buy. Highly recommended.
You dicks.
All right, back it up. We're good.
By the way, Cole's here too.
I am. I have no clue what y'all are talking about. I'm just kind of existing right now.
Hey, I know something you might want to talk about.
Uh-huh.
So, or we might all want to talk about. Sorry, Joe, I'm hijacking.
That's fine. We don't normally do news on this episode, but it's pretty newsworthy, so I say we go for it.
Massive news today is Microsoft's hand was more or less forced to reveal that, okay, yes, we're making a small console called the Microsoft Series X, or the Xbox Series X.
Series S.
Yep. Expect me to do that a lot. The Xbox Series S. But what I guess I didn't expect is that they're like, it's going to be $300. It's coming November 10th. So finally, there is pricing and date for a next generation console. Yes,
finally. finally. There were also rumors. They have not been confirmed yet, like the rest of the news has, but the rumors were that the Series X would be priced at $499, but it looks like Microsoft is still holding their cards on that.
I think it's pretty telling that they didn't confirm that, too.
Because it might be more than that, and they don't want to disappoint people now.
You know, when you're saying them out loud, it's just... This is why Joe reads all the copy.
Yeah.
Why they reserved the thought on it, though? Because I guess if people were claiming it's rumored for $5, but they intended to sell it for more, that might be like a reason for like, I don't think they were intending to sell it for more.
Yeah, I don't think they would go over $500.
You gotta remember that next gen graphics cards are coming out in literally 2 weeks, and you can get top of the line and the lowest value card for like $500.
So that's
something to take into consideration. Like, as much as we like to think old consoles don't have to keep up with PC, they do to an extent.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't put out a whole ass console and be like, you know, or you could just upgrade your graphics card.
Some people like flat asses too. I mean, you could put out a flat ass console and you get just as much mileage.
Yeah, but it's
to be fair, you could probably argue that the Series S is the flat ass console.
Touché.
Tim, what were you saying?
I was going to say it is an all digital console.
Yes, it is.
Just say, it does look like a speaker in a fast food joint. Everyone's made that joke. Okay, we're good.
Yeah. Also, did you see where Corsair retweeted it and like replaced the vent holes with an RGB fan?
Did they?
It was funny, and I was like, yeah, I'd rock it. I'm not going to sit here and act like I would.
Is the X supposed to be all digital too, or is that solely a feature of the S?
The X has a disk drive.
Yeah.
And I imagine there's probably a couple of reasons involved here for this. One, size. They wanted to be able to really hammer home that this is a tiny ass console. And it was funny to me because number one was watching the video for it. And she was holding her own controller at the time. I was like, hey, come look at this. And she's like, hey, what's up? And she's watching it and she's like, pauses the screen and keeps going back and forth looking at her controller and looking at the video. And she's like, there's no way. I was like, yeah, no, that's how big it's going
to
be.
I know this thing's gonna be a little baby compared to the PlayStation 5. Like this is less than half the size of a Series X by the look of it, the size comparison I've seen. And just
it can fit inside a Series X.
It is like ridiculous.
It's half the size almost completely.
It's funny because with the size and also with the digital only aspect, I'm like, man, this is going to look really awkward on my shelf. It's like, here's my NES Classic Mini. Here's my SNES Classic Mini. Here's my Genesis Classic Mini. Here's my TurboGrafx Classic Mini. Here's my Xbox Series S Classic Mini.
Here's my Xbox Mini.
And then here's my skyscraper PS5.
Yeah.
That's what they're all. That's where my shelf is.
You know, the funny part of that, too, is that, like, a lot of the memes surrounding the Series X has been, oh, it's a refrigerator, oh, it's a skyscraper, and it's like, okay, but look how fucking tiny it really is.
Mm.
And the Series S is even smaller.
Yeah.
Because when you stop and you go, okay, I get it. The Series S is the smallest console. They're talking about the width of it. If you watch that video, it's the same height as the X, which means the X is fucking small too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they'll all fit on top of my... It's a little thicker. They'll all fit on top of my Philips CDI, so...
Oh,
is that sitting on top of a turntable? What are you doing?
I
have a Vitrola in the corner, and that's where all my consoles are stacked.
My actual original Xbox sits on top of my Philips CDI, and it's, like, dwarfed. The CDI is unbelievably huge if you see one in person. The 900 series, of course.
I want to see a picture of this now.
I got one somewhere. I'll see what I can do.
Last year, you know, when they announced the all digital Xbox One S or the Xbox One all digital edition, I was on the show being rather critical because I felt like the price point did not properly incentivize the loss of a disk drive and going all digital. But from what we've heard speculated on next generation consoles, like $300 seems like it's an easy like $200 less than what the Series X and the PlayStation 5 are going to be. Mm-hmm. And that is an incentive to go all digital, because obviously, I mean, I'm sure that Microsoft is losing money on this thing. Like if it's powerful enough to, you know, and it is powerful enough to run Series X games, perhaps, you know, not as good. It doesn't do 4K.
Right? 1440p upscale. Well,
that's what throws me off 4K. A little bit, because again, I think everybody on this show is more familiar with than I am on the X to S comparison. So is that $200 difference between the X and the S only different because of a disk drive?
No. The Series S is like a third as powerful as the Series X. From what I'm hearing, they're saying that the Series S is on par with the Xbox One X to make shit even more confusing.
This should just be an Xbox One X, and I can just keep my X and play Xbox Series X games.
They did.
That actually concerns me a little bit then, too, because if the power between the two models is going to be that different, is that going to impact how developers approach the system?
I mean, you consider how different graphics cards are on PC, and there can be a wide range between like low and ultra settings. And I think that's what you're looking at here. But I think Microsoft is looking to price this thing to move because they can make up that money by selling games digitally, because you can't take advantage of physical sales, and to get you in the door with
Game Pass.
That's what it's called.
Real money maker right
because
there.
Because here's the thing. You can do the Microsoft All Access program. And get the Series S financed with Game Pass and live, it's with Game Pass Ultimate, for $25 a month.
Yeah.
Because I admittedly have considered that, like, if I were to get Xbox in that regard, make that the system where it's, like, solely used as the subscription service, almost like a cable box.
I mean, that's,
buy the system, get Game Pass. Like, okay, well, I'm playing games through Game Pass, and that's good.
That's literally what I did with the Xbox One X. It's like, I put review codes on it and use Game Pass. Mm-hmm. That's it.
What more do you need?
You mentioned the lack of the disc drive, and I think I'm one of the only ones here that doesn't partake in the physical copies of fucking everything.
I don't do everything, but
it's weird for me. Like, I look at my situation now, and while by principle I'm still the guy where it's like, if I can get a physical, I'd rather do that, and if I can get a physical via sale, even better.
No,
but I will admit I don't get rid of games as often as I used to for like various sales or whatever. But I can also say that there are still the occasional times where I'm glad I had a physical for the sole purpose of like getting something on it, getting something back. Like, I bought Animal Crossing when that came out, and all my friends were like, I'm going to get it digitally because I'm going to play it, and I just want to be able to boot it up on the system. I'm like, okay, that's cool. I'm getting a physical because I don't know if I want to keep it or not. And that's honestly what happened. I bought it. I played it for 2 months. I got burned out, and I got $40 back for it.
Hell yeah.
So, like, to me, it's like that, even though it's not as common as you would expect, like, I'm not flipping every game I buy or anything like that, there's just that thought process of, I can at least get rid of this or give it to a friend or something if I get tired of it. But by that same token, if you could hope for discounts on digital to be so low at times that you won't even care about looking for a refund at any point. Because it's like, well, this game cost me like $10. I don't even care if I want to flip it. There's no need to. You know, then that's different.
Now, an interesting take on that, though, to put just a little, plant a little seed in your mind, right? There is nothing like Game Pass on Nintendo.
No.
When, oh, Game if you Pass is play, fantastic.
No, no, no. Like, but listen, like, if you want to play a first-party Nintendo game, your only choice is to buy it, right?
That's true.
Mm-hmm. So that's not something we deal with on, as Xbox players. If you've got Game Pass, Xbox's all first-party titles come straight to Game Pass. So there's no, oh, I might not like it kind of threat there. So an all-digital system is not as daunting because it's like, okay, well, if I don't like the game, I'm not out anything. I just uninstall it.
No.
You that know? Is true. Like, if I, that, and that's why, like, I thought about the idea of, like, if I solely use it for, like, the Game Pass angle, that's not a problem. Like, because mm-hmm. it becomes like, it's like the equivalent of, like, Netflix for games or how Sega Channel used to be. Mm-hmm. And I was fine with all those things. So, frankly, like, I'm fine with it. It's just there's always that nagging thing where you're like, but what if? For that one game, it's not on Game Pass, and it's published by like Atlas or some shit, and I want
to
play it.
You're not going to worry about that on Xbox.
Yeah, never. Atlas on Xbox? Are you fucking crazy, dude? Oh, you crazy. I'm surprised that Disgaea is hitting Windows 10 store on Game Pass. I think that's pretty cool. That's a new development with NIS and Xbox, so that's cool.
Yeah. I feel like they're branching out sooner.
I mean, think about it. It's like they've released Disgaea, Disgaea 4, Disgaea 4 Complete, Disgaea 4 Complete Plus. It's like, okay, we've run out of places to put Disgaea 4, and we run out of symbols to subtext it with. What do? There's this PC sitting right over there. We can get some more money out of it.
Another storefront.
Like yeah, like at that point, it's a no-brainer. Get that money, damn it.
Should we put it on like, Xbox? No, fuck them.
That's what the Messenger did for fucking ever.
Yeah. The I guess the thing about like digital only, like that system having appeal, I was in the same boat as Purnell, really, with another additional thing that I'll get to, but like I really think the Nintendo Switch actually broke me of that, because as I'm looking here, I'm sitting at 580 digital games, and like the physical games I have now are taking up too much shelf space. Imagine if I took that and multiplied it by 5.
But some of those games you get digitally on Switch can be pretty cheap. It goes back to the earlier point of like when the sale is games. So good, I really don't care if I don't like it or not. I was like, well, I got my 9 cents of fun. I'm good. Yeah.
Well, I will say that most of them are not 9 cent games. I typically avoid those. However, I will say I bought Santa Tracker just because my friend told me I had to, and listen, you know, just to try out something. And
did you have to try out tracking Santa?
Well, no, there's a weird thing. Do y'all want to hear about it?
Santa Tracker, perish the thought.
In Santa Tracker, there's a weird thing that you would not expect. Okay.
That's like a statement.
I don't know. I'm like 50-50 whether I want you to explain this or to remain ominous and anonymous.
There's a thing you wouldn't expect in Santa Tracker.
I mean, it's so true that one of my best friends like texted me on a weekend, like just to say, you have like Santa Tracker is 29 cents right now. You have to buy it and then listen to or go down to the music player and select it. And I was like, okay, do y'all want to know what happens?
It's cold outside on this thing.
Yes, and I need to know what happens when you play whatever it is that. I'm confused.
Santa Tracker. Okay, so Santa Tracker, which you can frequently get for like 30 cents or less. So you go down
Santa
like,
Tracker developed by Ontega Games. Released December 7, 2018 on the Switch for $2.99. Chris, tell us about Santa Tracker.
All right. So Santa Tracker, it's got some things on it. I don't know what they are. Then it has a music player.
I don't know what kind of music it plays.
What you need is to have the Joy-Cons hooked up, not a third-party thing that doesn't rumble, or the Pro Controller hooked up, something that'll vibrate. And well, you select the music player, and it will play a Christmas song for you. It will rumble the Joy-Cons so violently that they will produce that they will produce the bass tone for the actual song.
Oh my god.
The Switch is physically played by the vibration of the Joy-Cons or Pro Controller. And it's friggin' like, it's one of the like top three things that like that you can do with the with force feedback in a controller that is like, you know, just this holy shit, you have to see it to believe it kind of thing.
I'm eyeing this up for $3 and I'm kinda tempted to take the plunge to see what you're talking about.
Wait till it's 30 cents.
You know, yeah, you know it's gonna be 30 cents.
Swap the track Santa with it. Santa will come to you because of that damn thing being so noisy.
I know, yeah.
Get this Christmas creep out of here.
I'll add it to my wish list.
There you
it's
go.
It's got like some mini games and stuff in it. It actually looks like it might be kind of fun. I don't know. I didn't try it.
I don't believe you on that. I don't believe you that.
That's probably, yeah. It is not my job to sell or review this game.
I am looking at screenshots and it, man, it does not look that hot. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
Well, not fair to judge a book by its cover. If you do buy it, Joe, if you would do me a favor and like actually make a video of that, of the thing happening, because you got like a camera or some way to like record it that is better than what I've got. So I would
have a fucking phone.
Do you not have phones?
No, my phone camera's God. Broken, actually.
All right, Mr. Catfish.
Mr. Catfish.
Oh, shit. Oh, Pernell, before we wrap up and head into the reviews, I did want to say I was thinking of you. I was at the store. They had Mountain Dew Voodoo 2.
Electric Boogaloo?
Yes. They have another mystery flavor for Mountain Dew this year, and I am pretty sure it is Skittles flavor.
Oh, shit. Well, then, guess who's back on the horse? Because if there's a Skittles flavored soda, I needs it. I needs to know.
It's either Skittles or Starburst. It's one of the two, but it's definitely a candy flavored soda, and it's good. I like it.
I mean, I'm like, for people who don't know, I'm like one of the only, well, I guess there's a lot of people that have done this, but I actually attempted and drank Skittle Brow on more than one occasion. So like, I am ready for a Skittle soda wholeheartedly. I will buy it. I must know firsthand. So I will report back and we can compare flavor palettes.
That's your homework for next week.
That's right. Voodoo 2.
But yeah, should we jump into reviews?
We aren't even doing reviews. We've reviewed two games already.
No.
Very true. All right. Third game to talk about tonight is called Marvel's Avengers. A key for this game was provided by Square Enix for the purpose of this review, just like every game we cover on this show. But, you know,
not a headliner. Had to wait until we were done talking about Mutant Muds and Santa Tracker. Yeah.
Important stuff.
Yeah. And Xenoblade on the pre-show.
Yeah. Also provided by Square Enix for some reason.
Yeah. Mutant Muds provided, Santa Tracker provided by Square Enix. Marvel's Avengers, again, a key for the game was provided by Square Enix for the purpose of this review, developed by Crystal Dynamics and Eidos Montreal, published by Square Enix, released September 4th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $59.99. Marvel's Avengers is an epic third-person action-adventure game that combines an original cinematic story with single-player and cooperative gameplay. Assemble into a team of up to 4 players online, master extraordinary abilities, customize a growing roster of heroes, and defend the Earth from escalating threats. Tim, tell us about Marvel's Avengers.
My God, this game, right? I mean, Jesus. this feels like something.
You can use Jesus?
Jesus. Yeah, Jesus is available. Got a whole tech tree. He's got a bunch of skins he can unlock with some paid fucking currency.
I want
that. Does he have his own battle pass?
He has his own. Jesus will have his. He does have his own battle pass. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called the Bible.
Y'all about to get saved.
Y'all about to get saved. Okay, so anyway, yeah. This
game, review this game is Christian AF.
Huge, huge game that people have been, I don't know, just dunking on for weeks, like since the beta hit, and I guess even going back to like last E3 when it was first showed off and everybody looked at it and went like, Okay. All right. That's what you've been working on, guys. Huh? Okay. All right.
We should point out a lot of people are upset that these are like their own universe of Marvel characters and they're not based on movie characters.
Oh,
so they look and sound different, and that upsets a lot of people.
Hey, I have news for you about the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
And that the movies are based on comics, and that there have, in fact, been many games over the course of the past few decades that have not been based on the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They are clearly, I guess, hewing a little bit in that direction. Like, I feel like in that initial reveal trailer, like the characters, like there was a little bit more of like a weird uncanny valley going on with like, oh, these look like they were supposed to look like the actors in the movie, but they don't quite because they couldn't license their likenesses. Mm-hmm. But like playing the final game, like I did not get that at all. Like they felt more just, I didn't get that feeling, and it's just like whatever. I mean, if that is your only touchstone for Marvel, then you're probably playing this game and going, who the fuck is Kamala Khan? I mean, honestly, I'm sure there's plenty of people out there bitching that it's like, oh, why are all these other heroes in the movie? But I start the game and like the point of view character is this stretchy little Muslim girl.
She's wide by the game, honestly. That, about the way, just probably yes, give her some context.
I did not realize character. That she was like one of the, because I wasn't really following this game. I did not realize she was one of the six heroes included in the base game. And in terms of the campaign, she's kind of your point of view character who you start out as and kind of guides you through the story there. So yeah, lot of opinions flying around about this game. Many of them from people who have not played it. There's certainly a lot going on here and a lot to take in. So let's get into it. So yeah, there is a single player campaign in this game, which I was kind of not really aware of until like I really fired it up, because all I've heard people talking about is like, oh, it's going to be a service game and you jump in the multiplayer and you get, you know, four people in there with you or three people in there with you and you do that and you grind for loot and da 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 and all that stuff. But no, at the end of the day, like there is a single player campaign in there that has crafted single player missions. There are clearly some where you're out in more open areas and you have like a couple teammates with you where you're going to get the feel where it's like, oh, okay, I can see how this is how things are going to go once I, you know, beat the game and go forth onto the internet with my friends or not my friends in order to do adventures and fight evil. You can see where the game is going to break out. But like as it is, like if on the main menu, like, yes, the multiplayer is front and center, but it tells you like, hey, this is post story. So if you are entering this, you are threatening spoilers for the single player story. So the way the story plays out and starts out and that's kind of like the demo level that was showed off where, you know, there's this thing going on called A-Day and Kamala Khan is there because she entered a fan fiction contest. And of course she ends up running into like all the Avengers along the way for like a moment or two, and then shit goes haywire and this great new energy source blows up. Surprise, Captain America dies, and that definitely sticks. 100%. I don't know if you've read comics or watched movies before, but yeah, he's definitely dead and does not show up later.
Dead.
Yeah, permanently super dead. He has this huge tech tree you never get to use ever. Just and all these skins, and you need to unlock them just to use them in that first mission, and that's it. Definitely never shows up again in the game. Definitely. So yeah, and then some time passes, the Avengers have broken up, and Kamala Khan has since gained superpowers. She's an Inhuman, which is kind of the Marvel Cinematic Universe's way of scrubbing mutants from existence, or at least was before Disney bought Fox or whatever. She's an Inhuman. She suddenly has powers. There's a bunch of people that suddenly have powers from this explosion that happens, and she's investigating some shit, gets caught up in some shit. And goes about an adventure where she ends up, you know, getting the gang back together, getting the Avengers gang back together, and getting to the bottom of what Advanced Idea Mechanics is up to. AIM being the villain of the game, I guess, the monolithic corporate villain headed up by MODOK. can't hate a game that's got MODOK in it, because MODOK's great. And yeah, so, you know, you go through the story and, like, you get the Avengers reassembled and get their helicarrier back together and, you know, do this, that, and the other thing. And like, yeah, throughout the course of the story, you'll play as Kamala a lot towards the beginning, but then as you go and get more characters, you can switch between them for different missions. Sometimes it'll force you to play a certain character. But generally, you have freedom. Like, even on a character's, like, because each character will has, like, a character-specific story quest line, basically. Like, it tells you, well, it's going to auto-select this character for this mission, but you can change it if you want to. So, like, you're not even, like, stuck to those characters for their own damn missions, which is kind of funny. So each character does, like, play pretty differently. Like, I guess at the very base level, like, you have your basic, like, light attack, heavy attack combos, but each character does have their own different powers and abilities, though a lot of the diversity in their move sets doesn't start to manifest until you've leveled them up until, I don't know, I'd say around, like, 5, 6, or 7, and then you can start really having them branch out more. But, you know, Kamala is stretchy, so she has stretchy arms, and she can embiggen. She can make herself gigantic, but most of her moveset is kind of like whipping her fists out there. It actually feels not unlike Kratos from God of War. You know, the Hulk is the Hulk. He's just this huge, burly motherfucker who smashes things and grabs guys and smashes them into the ground, and lots of smashing with the Hulk. Black Widow has a grappling hook, which she can use to grapple two enemies. She also has guns and various different gun shit she can do, which is fun. Black Widow is a hell of I think she might be the most fun character out of the base six. Though they're all fun in their own way. Like, Iron Man has his different... he can fly, for one. Only him and Thor can fly. And he has, like, different lasers and repulsors and missiles you can unlock. You know, Thor has... Thor has his... you know, lightning abilities. Each character has, like, an offensive ability, a support ability, and a ultimate ability. They're all on cooldowns. Cap has his shield, which he throws around. I know I'm saying, like, one thing here, but there's more to it than that. Like, each character has a meter that they feed off of for different things. So there's definitely, like, a bit of a learning curve to each character to really use them effectively and not just jumping from one character to another and, like, mashing things out. But kind of the thing, oh god, there's so much going on in this game. So on top of that, for each character, there is also gear in this game. Like, enemies will drop gear, you'll find gear in chests. Each character has 4 equipable gear slots, so you're finding gear that will upgrade your overall power level and upgrade your stats and give you different bonuses. Kind of one of the, might be the biggest problem with this game as for what it's trying to do is that none of the gear is reflected on your character cosmetically. Like, you get outfits, and there's certainly plenty more outfits to unlock should you invest a lot of time into this game, but, like, actually picking up, like, a bracer or a vest or something has no effect on how your character looks.
No.
And that kind of thing just makes picking up loot a lot less interesting to me. They have a thing where you can literally just go in there, hold a button, and it'll equip the best stuff. And I'm throwing up air quotes because sometimes what the game thinks is the best is the bullshit. you kind of have to look at it. I don't know. I think it goes solely off of power level, but sometimes it's like, no, I'd rather, you know, have a bit more of an attack boost here. Like, I want to min-max a little bit on this character. I don't want just, like, what you think the best thing is, or I want this bonus to this particular attack. So there is reason to get in there and kind of customize that stuff. And you can also, like, there's an avenue for upgrading gear if you want to do that. Though, again, I don't know why you really want to do that, because when you're playing as a character, you keep finding more gear. I mean, occasionally it's like, oh, okay, I'll upgrade this because it'll unlock a new perk. Occasionally you're like, okay, I need, like, one more power level to get this character kind of up to snuff to be competitive on this level, or on this mission. Each mission has a power level rating. So that's all there. The game has fucking different factions you can earn rep with.
which whenever I see factions and rep, that is like the biggest calling card of like service game, like Destiny stuff to me is like, oh, faction rep. And as near as I can tell, there's only two factions. There's Shield, and then there's the Inhuman Alliance. And like, that's it. And I'm like, did you need to do this part just because every other service game does this? Like this, when you only have like a couple factions right now, did you need to do this right now? Maybe, you know, this is a thing you could roll in over time. Did you need to hit everything all at once? But, you know, anyways, you'll grind out. You can start grinding out faction rep and faction levels, which will give you bonuses. And like, there's faction reps that will, you know, they give you daily quests you can do to, you know, some are just as simple as like, you know, beat up a bunch of guys or beat up a bunch of guys in this particular way or go beat up the taskmaster over here, stuff like that to earn more rep. But that's there. That's going on.
Now, the big question with stuff like this, are there timed rewards? Is there stuff I'm going to miss out on if I'm not playing it constantly every day?
Some of the stores, and there's a lot of vendors, like there's a certain point like where, you know, your helicarrier is kind of your hub, your base of operations, and it starts out and it's just like you and the Hulk hanging around. And then like you reach a point in the game and suddenly like all of Shield is there and there's all these vendors around and like the place is popping like a freaking carnival. And it's like, oh my God. And there's a lot of that you can't really engage with like at that point in the single player campaign, cause you just don't build up enough currency. Like in some of the market, I know there is at least one marketplace I engage with where the skins that were available rotated, on like a daily or weekly basis. I'm sure they're going to resurface later. Like nothing, like the missions you get from the faction reps, those will refresh on a daily basis. I don't think you need to do them at this point. Like it all seems like stuff that is going to come back around. Like at this point in the game, it doesn't. It's tough to say. There's a lot going on. It does not seem like there's any time thing. Like, well, if you don't grind through and do this right now, you can't do this. I mean.
That's my biggest hang up with games as a service games is like, the game Dauntless. I was big into that game for a few weeks. If someone were new to the game, their stuff in the first season, they could never get.
Yeah. They do not have seasons as of right now. Just to kind of wrap up talking about the story, I don't know, or the game just, so I'm on like the last mission of the single player campaign. Even though there's like a bunch of other side stuff to do. So I played through like pretty much the whole thing and I really enjoyed it. Like just as a single player experience, I just want to get that out there.
I really enjoyed
the single player campaign. Just jumping between characters, going through the missions. Like there's some really cool set pieces, and crafted missions going on. There's like an escape sequence that's pretty late in the game that I won't say where it is or what's going on, that is just like really awesome. Like actually, like this is an awesome sequence. It is not super long, but it looks really cool. It looks great. It was a lot of fun to play through. Kind of some of my beefs with the single player, which may extend out into the infinite realm of the multiplayer. There is not many like Marvel characters in the game at this time. You have your six Avengers. Hank Pym shows up like halfway through the story. There's like a couple other minor characters, but all you get for villains in this campaign, there's MODOK.
Don't give anyone like late in the game away. No,
I can't do that because there's nothing to give away.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if there were any twists or anything.
No, not as far as villains go. I'll say like, I mean, you might not know that MODOK is MODOK right off the bat, but I knew it was MODOK. I mean, it's AIM. He's, you know, this dude is in a chair. His head is swelling. I'm like, I know where this is going. Sorry if you didn't, but it's MODOK. Like read comic books. There is Taskmaster, who is in the intro mission. He's in the first mission in the game. And then there's Abomination, who shows up like a few missions in.
Yeah.
That's it. And you don't like Taskmaster doesn't show back up other than optional missions. Abomination doesn't show back up. Well, he shows up like but either way, that's it. Like I saw no other, there was no other like minor villains dropping down.
Like no other like recognizable characters like making cameos. And it was just like, man, it's just me out here beating up a ton of like AIM robot dudes. And yeah, I was just like, I could have used a bit more Marvel sprinkled on this thing. I mean, maybe they're holding back for the, you know, this longer, you know, roadmap that they're going to roll out for this game over the course of the next few years or whatever.
No.
But it was kind of a bummer, like, just not to see more familiar faces along the way. Yeah, all you're facing pretty much the whole game are you're fighting AIM. That's who you're fighting. And they have a decently, you know, it's certainly not. There's a lot of different enemies under there, like a lot of different robots with different abilities. Like it's not repetitive in that sense. It's like you do need to have different strategies. You do need to approach different enemies in different ways, but they are all kind of like robots or mechs or giant spider mechs in like some way, shape, or form. They'll have different abilities. Some of them have shields. There's different ways you need to think about tackling them. But they are all just AIM robots. Like, that is the only opposing faction you are fighting in the game. There is no, like, Hydra. There's no hand ninjas. There's nothing else. It's just advanced idea mechanics. That does me a concern when you think about how they want this game to be, you know, replayable. They want you to party up with your friends and grind through these missions to level up your characters and grind up resources to get more gear, unlock more skins, and just play this game off to, you know, off into the horizon forevers. It just feels like it just need, like, there's still a good variety of enemies. They're just all AIM.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a bummer. And even just like, so by, you know, reaching this point at the end of the single player, I have barely scratched the surface of what these characters can do. Like, there is so much. There is three tech trees for each character. There's like their basic moves. There's tech abilities for their like super abilities. And then there's a top tier mastery tech tree, which doesn't start to unlock until you're a much higher level. Much, much higher level. I mean, like 30s and 40s, and you won't see anywhere close to that just playing through the single player. You know, I don't know, you know, how fast like it takes to grind up that far. But it's just like, man, it seems like there's a lot of this game I wish I had gotten to do more with the characters, I guess, during the single player is what I'm getting at. But I mean, I guess on the upside, there's still there's a lot to do in playing this game multiplayer, and there are some. And I also wonder about how repetitive the environments were going to get. There was only one time playing through the single player missions, playing through the campaign, that I was like, oh, this is the exact same AIM base I was in for this other mission before. Like, exactly. If they did reuse environments before that, they were at least clever about it. And I think at least in Utah, which is kind of one of the base areas, it's like right around where the helicarrier is. So you do a number of missions there. Like, I think the starter section there is the same, but then it branches out into different like possible map sets from there. So I think they're still clever about it. But I just wonder, like, in going out and, again, you know, grinding this game over and over again, like, are you going to start to see these same maps over and over again? Is it even going to matter? Because you're just grinding away, and that's kind of how these games go, and that's something that, you know, frankly, people enjoy about it. Like, I've enjoyed firing it up every, you know, night the past week or so, just be like, okay, I know what's going on in this game. I can slightly zone out. Yeah, it's been a rough week. I could turn the brain off a little bit. But yeah, but then, yeah, so the way things, so from there out, just looking, so single player campaign, really enjoyed it, possibly worth the price of admission all on its own. But, you know, the thing that everyone's been talking about, the thing that they really want you to invest in, is this long roadmap of the multiplayer. And on the upside, All the characters from here forward are going to be free. The only character that's been announced is Spider-Man.
Well, Hawkeye too, right?
Oh, did they formally announce Hawkeye?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, Spider-Man and Hawkeye, one of those two is only available on one particular platform, and that is bullshit. That is fucking bullshit. What happened? It sucks so bad, because I'm just sitting here thinking, like, I like these six characters, and there's a lot I can do with them, but I was already kind of like, man, you know, there was like a leaked potential roster that was like 20 names on it. I'm like, man, this game is going to be badass. Like, once there's this many characters in it and this many power combinations and this much stuff you can do, that sounds like so much goddamn fun. I mean, as it is now, like, you only have four characters in a party. There's only six characters. There's only so many configurations you can do, which is fine to start. But I was starting to feel like a little bit of a thirst. Like, what else can they do with other characters? And then you think about how, like, Spider-Man only on PlayStation. That sucks so bad, because Spider-Man is not like a minor character. He's a very major character. He might
what the Soul most, Calibur 2 is this?
Yeah, he might be the most, I mean, at least, but, well, that's the thing. There was no, like, oh, Xbox is just getting, you know, this other character,
yeah.
You know? It was just like, no, Sony's getting Spider-Man and the rest of you are getting nothing. Like, it would be better if, you know, Xbox were getting, I don't know, Spider-Woman. Why not? She's a spidery character. Very different power set, but it's fine. Or maybe Sony only gets Peter Parker Spider-Man, but Xbox gets Miles Morales Spider-Man. Fuck you.
Yeah, it should have been something where, like, give everybody Spider-Man, give PlayStation some exclusive skins, but giving them an entire character that no one else can play. Like, PC gamers, you're missing out on this too. It's not just Xbox gamers.
Yeah.
Like, I am absolutely 1,000% against this practice, and I don't support it, and I am angry about it.
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks, because it's like, well, buy it on the PlayStation, or you're missing out, like, for sure. And it's not something insignificant, you know? It's Spider-Man, and characters are cool and fun to play as in this game, and I can see how Spider-Man will probably be a lot of fun to play as, like, a little bit of... like, just messing around with, like, Black Widow's grappling hook. Like, I can see, like, oh, yeah, this is probably, like, going to be a little bit, like, webbing and swinging around. Yeah. So, anyways, it's good news that all the characters are going to be free. That is good news. It sounds like the way they want to monetize is through skins and through individual character battle passes, which sounds terrible, kind of. But it's like, well, at least you're getting the character for free. You can see if you like the character, and if you like the character, then you can invest in a battle pass to start unlocking all of their crap.
No.
If you don't like a character, don't worry about it. Whatever. No harm, no foul. And I think that's kind of a better way to do it than just than putting the characters themselves behind a paywall, even if it sounds aggravating to be like, oh, this game's at a certain point when they have a certain number of characters out, it's going to have like 20 battle passes.
Well, for those of us who are not very well fluent in the concept of the battle pass, what are you getting when you get a character's battle pass?
So you'll pay whatever amount of money they're going to charge, and then you will start playing as that character, and as you gain experience and level up, as you play as that character and you do missions, you gain experience or whatever, that battle pass is going to level up, and say when it reaches like level 2, you get this skin. When it reaches level 3, you get this player card. You reach this point, you get like this emo animation. So you'll unlock more things for that character by playing them more. And of course, at the end of it is probably some cool, sweet, legendary skin that you can only get by playing a whole bunch of that character or something like that. So it's all optional swag. But yeah, that's basically what it is.
Okay.
So yeah, a lot to go through with this game. Big game.
Very big game.
$60. Is it worth it right now?
I mean, certainly, like, the play value is there. And I have enjoyed the single player campaign enough that, like, I would not be ashamed to spend $60 on it. There's certainly enough multiplayer content to keep a person busy. I mean, especially if you have friends to play the game with, like if you have a crew you're going to roll with, you are going to have a great time with this game. Like most, as much as everyone has kind of been bagging on this game for like jamming in games as, you know, service hooks into a game that you, they don't necessarily feel needs it. All the other games that you list off as being games of service are like, well, what they tried to do with Anthem, but that game was shit. like The Division, like with Destiny, those are the two big ones, but they're shooters. And this is not a shooter. This is a superhero beat 'em up action game. It's, I can't think of another game off the top of my head that has tried to offer the, that kind of long-term tail and long-term hooks that wasn't a shooter. And I think there is merit to that. That's going to appeal to a lot of people, especially if you are into Marvel stuff. And I don't feel like it has so, well, also it's not competitive, but it doesn't have so much of a skill ceiling, as a first person shooter, you know, and if you've played more action games, I think you'll take to it a lot more. Or if you just are more of a casual gamer, I think you'll take to it more as something to sit down and play with your friends. Kind of my caveat and all that is I feel like most people will be more if you're just looking for single player, you'll probably be a little more satisfied paying a little bit less. But also, like, just kind of putting on my speculation hat, I might imagine, well, actually, two things. One, I don't know that they've announced a, correct me if I'm wrong, have they announced like a PlayStation 5 / Xbox Series X upgrade path for this game yet?
I believe it's free upgrades.
Is it a free upgrade? Marvel's Avengers.
Cole, do you know off the top of your head?
Upgrade.
I have no idea.
Helpful.
Yeah.
Trying to get you involved and you're just
okay,
like,
it's a free upgrade. So never okay. mind. That's not a concern. I Googled it and I found the information. So that's nice. A free upgrade. That's good.
Thanks for checking that out, Pernell. Good job.
Yeah. I think, certain developers that publish, certain publishers that publish Control could learn something here. just give us the damn game. But also, another consideration, I think, is that they are, because they want to make their movie, their money on the back end, I could see this game being very aggressively priced for the holidays if you feel like waiting a couple months. But certainly in a dollar to time ratio, you're going to get your money's worth out of it. And I think the single player campaign is a lot of fun and pretty much almost well worth it on its own. And if you have some friends to play with, like I think it's worth buying. Surprisingly, I'm shocked. I didn't think I would like this game that much, but I did.
I had a lot more fun with the game than I was expecting to have. I didn't really enjoy the beta too much. I'm still very, very, very disappointed and turned off by the Spider-Man stuff.
That's a real bummer.
Yeah. I hope that they find a way to change that or to go back on that. It is a shitty situation, but I have a feeling we're just going to see Sony doing more and more of this.
Yeah. Companies and competition. I just want to be clear. I feel like they're like, regardless of what happens down the road, I do feel like the game as it exists right now has enough content that it is worth purchasing. And is enough fun that it is worth purchasing and has definitely gotten a lot of hate. And like, there's definitely some goofy shit about this game. Like, you've seen possibly the quick time events that you don't actually need to trigger for them. They'll just like get bored and finish on their own sometimes. there is some loading in this game that is annoying. I forgot about that. Like, as if you fucking die, like you got to sit through like a 30 second to a minute loading screen.
I've had texture loading issues as well. Like, I was running through an area and there were just tree branches in the air, but no trees around.
Mm.
Which I've seen That's issues with like hair that. Textures coming in and out during cutscenes. I'm not sure if you saw that or not.
No, I did not see that one. Do you set your shit to performance or high resolution?
I had it on performance and I didn't really notice anything, so I set it to 4K, and
I noticed a significant difference. I thought
I'm guessing it's just whatever shit is on my TV.
Maybe, yeah. So yeah,
like I have it on game mode, so it doesn't have any of the special stuff.
But yeah, in the end, I was kind of pleasantly surprised by this game. And yes, I do enjoy, as a fan of Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan, like, that was also a big hook for me, and that I enjoy that character, and getting to see a lot of her was awesome.
Good stuff. How's it stand up against Santa Tracker?
I haven't played Santa Tracker yet.
Nothing stands up against Santa Tracker.
I've heard, like, the HD Rumble features, like, it does not play a theme song in Marvel's Avengers. So... there's no stereoscopic 3D like in Mutant Muds or whatever. So I don't know. I don't know about the other two, how it stacks up against those other two games we've reviewed on this show. But yeah, pleasantly surprised overall with Marvel's Avengers, despite all the noise around it.
All right. Well, Tim, that is it for you. I guess we'll let you get going.
Yeah, man.
That was like eternal night. Reviewing Call of Duty length review.
There's a lot to talk about in this game, man. It's a big game. Lots going on. I'm sure tomorrow I'm going to be like, fuck, I forgot to talk about this.
Yeah, probably.
I feel assaulted.
I do that a lot. Not a lot, but enough. All right. I will bid you all a good night. Oh my God.
I have school in the morning.
Fucking, yeah. Today was the first day of school here in our Western New York. So it was a doozy of a day.
Oh boy.
All right.
Well, do you have any final words?
I really don't. No, not this time. good night.
All right. Take it easy. All right. Next game to talk about is called RPG Maker MV, developed by Katakawa Corporation, published by NIS America, released September 8th on Switch and PS4 for $49.99. An epic journey begins with you. Become a master game developer with RPG Maker MV. With an arsenal of tools at your fingertips, create elaborate, exciting, and memorable video games straight from your console. Then share your adventures online with other players who can enjoy your epic chronicles. Burnell, tell us about RPG Maker MV.
My reviews are going to be really short, succinct, baby, and I'm going to prove it right now. So, RPG Maker MV is pretty much exactly what it says. It's the next game in the lineup of the RPG Maker franchise, which has been around for quite a while. And it's kind of nice to see it make its way to a game console with a touchscreen and portability. What is RPG Maker exactly? Well, essentially, if you liked RPGs from the SNES era primarily, well, you will like the potential for the games that you can get off of RPG Maker, because that is the style of game you will be given the capability of producing using this product. It is a rather robust creation tool that allows you to craft maps, allows you to craft character designs, classes for your characters, monsters, well, I probably should go through it bit by bit, but I'm not going to go through the entire game because, just like the tutorial, as he flat out says in the tutorial, there's a lot here and I'm not going through all of it. I'm not even joking. The tutorial guy flat out says that. Like, I'm not going through all this too much. But at the base set of the game, they run you through a nice little tutorial where they kind of run you through like a quick mini quest of sorts where the main character is being asked to perform certain, you know, generic RPG functions. But in the world of RPG Maker, those functions aren't capable for the guy because they don't exist yet. So you, the maker, have to create them. It's honestly a pretty nice little tutorial. I mean, it could be better, but it still is enough to kind of get you the idea of, you know, setting up the base elements of the game, as in give a character, like an NPC, movement. So, for example, if an NPC is sitting on the screen that you've placed there, you have to then provide him with the events so that he could, like, you know, move left, right, down, or whatever. And you can get, it gets pretty, not complicated, it gets pretty powerful, because you can either say that he can just move randomly, or you can tell the NPC to move in a very specific pattern, triggered by various things, like events in the game that you can set up as flag. And stuff like that lets you come up with monsters that you can then program into the game, and basically choose and set up. And then you do determine what their hit points and stuff are using a pretty in-depth stat system, like, you know, what type of attacks they get, what are the elemental properties of the attacks that the monsters get. It goes deep. It goes really freaking deep. You pretty much are able to craft every element that you can think of in an RPG. And I guess one good way to just lay it out in the context of our show here, so all those Kimco RPGs we've reviewed,
mm-hmm.
I can promise you, outside of the ones with the crazy, extremely complicated battle system, which I can't think of too many that went really complicated, but any of the general ones, you could probably program something like it in RPG Maker. A lot of the earlier Final Fantasy games, before they brought like Espers on, you could probably program into RPG Maker in some fashion. It is very robust. Once you get to the tutorial, they pretty much say, okay, open season, do what the hell you want. So in that regard, you are then left to a few options. You can create a game, which then allows you to, you know, choose your title screen, your title for the thing itself. And then you kind of have to go on and just literally program the entire freaking game. There is the sharing option once you've made the game, which is honestly fairly straightforward. You just go to like a, it's not exactly like a forum. Like, you're not going to look at a bunch of posts or anything per se, but they still call it the Maker forums, and you can pretty much log on to it, upload your game, and then let people play it. And, you know, of course, you can download games pretty straightforward easily, too. You just literally go to the same forum, say, I want to look for a game. You can put in, like, search criteria, like what kind of game you want, a short game, a long game, comedy, or, you know, serious, all kinds of, like, various little triggers you can set up for the games themselves. And one thing that I found nice about this is that I don't know if it was done by NIST themselves or if it was just some rando, but there was a RPG that they made, which was an extended tutorial, which
yeah, was you can download legit. It's called like Tips and Tricks, right?
Yep, that was it. Tips, and you Tricks, just and Bits.
Talk to people, and they give you all these different tips on how you can make your game better. And it's really cool to see people wrap up tutorials in a game themselves.
Yes, and the thing I like most about that tutorial is the fact that, even though I'm going to say it on it right now, the game, that tutorial itself also says it, which is that they're not going to sugarcoat it. It's a daunting task the sense that if you want to make, like when people like to complain about, you know, this game didn't do this, this game didn't do that, not to say that you can't complain about it, because, again, this is a marketable product in an RPG when you buy it, but you learn from this game just how meticulous you have to be to get everything just right, to get that perfect scenario to play out, and the dialogue to read just right, and for the NPCs to act the way you'd expect them to. You know, like, there's a lot that goes into it. And you have to set all the triggers up, so like if a guy leaves one screen, he immediately pops up on another screen in the exact right space, facing the right direction. Like, there's a lot that you do. But this tutorial, and just the general concept of it, is just that they let you know you can do it. If you have the drive and the desire to make these cool games, you can do it. And based on what's already out there and how long this franchise has been running for, there are a lot of people that have that exact passion. And, you know, the beautiful thing about it is, if you don't have that passion, it kind of doesn't matter, because there is also the means to just play what other people make. And let's be honest here, for a product like RPG Maker to exist, I think the fact that they make playing those creations accessible is a beautiful thing. And when I say accessible, I mean, you don't just have to do it through RPG Maker, the game. You can get RPG Maker, it's like a side app whose name I don't even remember.
RPG, but
it's
like this, Maker MV Player.
There, I love how I'm like, oh, the thing that you play them, the player. Oh, yeah. But you can download complex that free of charge. They're so complicated, man. You got to make these things simpler. But you can download that from the eShop free of charge, and you can literally go on and download other people's games and either and play them yourself, or in some cases, if you know people that have the game or might find a forum online, sometimes people will be asking you to play test their games for them, to give them feedback so they can make their games better. And that's something that people will definitely be doing on this thing. What is my take on this game? I'm gonna be blunt. I started trying to make a little game and I did not get very far because, quite frankly, I'm old and I'm always busy. I didn't have a lot of time, but I did make my little tiny town with my few NPCs in there. And I was trying to recreate what I did back on RPG Maker way back in like 2002. And I was trying to make a game where a person grows up, comes from like, basically becomes like a gangster, but they start out as just a generic like neighborhood kid who's mowing lawns for money. So he goes to like, he's like, hey, can you clean out my basement? You know, you gotta like, get some money. He's like, yeah, I get some money, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes in the basement. He's like fighting like spiders and rats because he has to literally clean the basement. And it's like, I tried to write the dialogue in a way where it was like, he's sweeping this. He's not actually attacking them. He's sweeping the spiders away for 5 damage. Like weird crap like that. But I didn't get like extremely far. Cause I mean, you couldn't even leave my town, but it's still just that general sense of like, I had some fun making this. And it's just fun to kind of just take a crack at that element of creativity. And they give you, I mean, I think there's going to be DLC too. So you can like download like more components if you want for like character creation, like, you know, character portraits and the like. But even still, the base game gives you a ton of character portraits. So like you have a variety of NPCs you can have on the game proper and main characters and the things like that. There's an editor. That's also a reference editing characters, but I couldn't find exactly how to edit them. So I just kind of ignored that and just kept doing my own thing because I didn't want to, you know, spend 5 hours trying to figure out how to edit a character. Yeah. But it does exist in the game. There's a lot of stuff going on here with this, as long as you've got the time to put in to utilize it. Forgot to mention also the battle system. The options for battle system programming. You can program battles to play like a Dragon Quest style, where it's just the text boxes and the monsters up at the top of the screen. And you're like, yeah, a guy hit for 5 damage or whatever. Or you can do the side view where you have your party members on the right and the monsters on the left. And then, you know, the guy walks up forward, does an attack and steps back, that kind of thing. So you get the option between those two, which I remember some of the earlier ones back when I used to do it, that didn't exist. So that's kind of nice. They added that finally now. And there's a variety of different triggers you can have even for like dungeon exploration, you know, floor damages and like warp tiles and stuff like that. So like you can get as robust as you would like with this thing. Your only real currency that you'll truly need is time. You got time and also creativity. Both of those are very valuable currencies. But if you can spend on either of those things, you can make a ton of cool products using just the base product. My general idea for the recommendation of it, I feel like if you even once sat there and said, you know what, I can do a better RPG than that, or even something ridiculous like, I miss classic RPGs, I wouldn't mind seeing what I could do with one, I think it's worth giving it a solid try because of the fact that, will you necessarily get to the end of the road? I can't promise you that. There's a lot to do here. And I'll be honest, a lot of people that are going to buy this game have never experienced a creator this robust.
No. Like, there's going to be a lot of people who buy this thinking they're going to be able to just shit out a rinky-dink RPG in 25 minutes, and they're going to be in for a huge surprise with how complex and daunting this can be.
Exactly. I wholeheartedly agree with you. You know, so, but at that same time, like if you do come in and you understand that you're not coming into like a quickie editor, you're coming into, and when we say it's daunting, we're not saying it in a sense like you need a programmer's degree to do it or that you need, you know, some sort of prior experience. It's just literally that you have to learn the tool.
Yeah.
The tool is, it's intuitive and user friendly to an extent, but you still have to learn it.
Yeah.
And that's not so simple as just booting it up and like knowing that A is jump and B is fire. You know, it's more to it than that. So, but if you're able to handle that, get on board. That was longer than I expected it to be, but it was still short.
This is going to be a short review 20 minutes later. Oops, that wasn't a short review.
My back.
Well, then, if you have the time, the determination, the drive, and $50, what is your official verdict?
A genuine buy. Though, with that said, even if you don't have those things, but you're interested in what can come out of it, get that players free of charge, and you'll be doing a lot of people a service by giving their games an audience.
Nice. All right, next game to talk about is called Immortal Realms Vampire Wars, developed by Palindrome Interactive, published by Calypso Media, released August 28th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $39.99. Immortal Realms Vampire Wars is an engaging strategy game set in a dark vampire world in turmoil that combines empire management and turn-based combat with unique card game elements. Descend into a mythical world filled with horrors and legends and haul yourself into a compelling gothic epos paired with a challenging game experience. Chris, tell us about Immortal Realms Vampire Wars.
Okay, so for one thing, I'm on the Nintendo.com page for this game. Because sometimes I like to look at the summaries and stuff and the pictures while I'm talking.
Okay.
And they have all their screenshots. They Photoshop to be brighter, like they're like washed out and white, because, you know, that way you can actually see something, which is, to me, that says more than I think I'm planning to about this game.
Oh no.
No, it's fine. The game's great. It's just very dark.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, like, I played it, like, a few different ways and in various backgrounds and stuff like that. And, yeah, it's, like, it's a challenge to kind of see everything that's going on. Fortunately, this isn't the kind of game where you really need that. So, yeah, let's hop into it. This is a real interesting, like, take on both a kind of strategy game, but not a real-time strategy game, and a strategy RPG. It's actually a little bit more of the strategy RPG type thing. So, and there's a lot in this game, so I'm gonna try and not make this a 40-minute review. So basically, you are a vampire, and in campaign mode, So there's a few different modes. There's campaign mode, and there's sandbox mode, and there's skirmish mode. So in campaign mode, you're playing through an actual story with characters, dialogue, and things like that, which you know has you meeting and playing as eventually all of the heads of these three different vampire families. Sadly, none of which sparkle in the sun. I'm free to say. I know I was looking for it, but no, they're more traditional vampires. Of course you have, I had this on a screen and now it's gone. Whatever. You have the Dracul family, which is the classic vampires, you know, they're people, but, you know, paler, they got capes, they go blah, blah. And, you know, their thing is, their leader is Vlad Dracul, which I believe is, the name of Dracula's dad. In like, at least with my limited vampire knowledge that I probably got from Castlevania. That's all I know. So they're like your average heavies, and you know, they got like warriors and archers, and later on you get some like magical characters and things like that. You know, units that you can add to your army. We'll get to that in a minute. And then you have the Nosfernus, which is basically the monster vampires. So like the only other video game where I've played something like this was, of course, Skyrim, which lets you turn into a vampire lord, which is a ghoulish thing with like wings and like, you know, flies around and does all kinds of, you know, gross stuff. And that's what these vampires are. So you can play as like a whole team of them. They're more feral vampires, if you will. They, you know, they're a lot more into like icky, you know, gunky stuff. Like, you know, they're into like necromancy, and, you know, they build their armies out of like the bodies of fallen soldiers and things like that. So, you know, they turn people into vampires, not while they're still living, but after they have died. So that's actually pretty cool. And you can play as them. And then the Moroya clan, which is the magic class. And so campaign mode has you playing through, starting with the Dracul family, and then you unlock different, like as you play through more chapters, you unlock different things you can do. But you have to start with the Moira chapter, or sorry, with the Dracul chapters, and we'll get back to that in a minute. Sandbox mode is really where it's at. It's like basically where you can just start a campaign, you can choose your overall goal, you can choose everything about your characters, you can actually set the difficulty, which is very important. And you know, like that's that basically is where you are basically playing through a real campaign, but just without the story mode. And then a skirmish is just straight up, you just set up a fight and fight it. So the way the game works is that it puts you on a world map, next to your basically your main, what would you call it, stronghold. And from there, you basically have a vampire lord. That is your leader of the troop, and that's going to be like your most powerful character, and you can customize that character to a degree. And they have names, for instance, which is, you know, important, at least for that character. And then from there, you can use your stronghold to basically buy troops like it was an RTS, except that, you know, everything in the game is determined by turn points, action points, whatever, what have you. So even the act of recruiting soldiers into your party, like one unit of archers, let's say, will cost you a turn point. And at the beginning of a given like campaign and stuff, then you only have like maybe two or three turn points. So, you know, and then you get to end your turn, which a turn in campaign mode and I guess also sandbox mode is like a season or something like that. Cause if you, every four turns, it's a whole year. And you know, considering these are vampires, they live forever. So,
no.
You know, the years don't really matter. But that's just to let you know that this is like the scope of the campaigns and stuff is like, you know, you're acting a lot faster than the events in the game. You know, what have you believe. So basically from there you build your army and then you basically move around blocks on the map. Each block, of course, takes up an action turn. And if the, you know, if the block is unoccupied, you can use an action turn to claim it. And that will add it to your store of, like, territory. And maybe your game might have a, you must claim all of the territory on the map as a goal. And of course, if you are, if there's something on the block, like let's say a manor, then when you claim the manor, then you can actually use that as like part of your town. And a manor is basically, you know, wealthy, rich people, which they become vampire lords. So you can actually get a new lord in your group, and then you can send that lord off with its own army, and then like actually do two different armies at the same time. And, you know, just ad infinitum or whatever. And yeah, so and you can conquer villages, which add to your blood amount. Now, blood in this game is money. It acts exactly like money. I have no idea how much blood equals one money. it could be a whole ton. It could be just a little bit. But everything from units to, you know, when you unlock a blacksmith, you can have items that you can add to your vampire lord that add stat boosts and things like that. You can also purchase cards, which we'll get to the cards in a minute. And, you know, like everything costs blood. So it's always good to have an amount of blood. And the other cool thing is that sometimes when you're doing a larger campaign, they'll just pop in sometimes and be like, hey, by the way, if you do this little side quest right quick, like gather up 400 blood for your town, then you'll get this bonus. And, you know, you could choose to ignore the bonus if you like, or you can go for it and, like, you know, make your character, you know, better. Okay, so that's, like, basically the thing. You conquer land, you unlock different things, and, of course, as you unlock more things and add more to your army, then other things unlock, and you can add those. So then the second part of the game is if you meet another army on a block that you're trying to claim or whatever, then it will start you a battle. Now, the battle mode actually goes into a separate screen where your characters and their characters are on either side of a battlefield, and you move in a grid like a tactic style kind of game. And this varies wildly depending on which kind of vampires you are. Your classic Dracul, you know, vampires, you might go in a sort of, you know, warriors to the front, archers to the back, and, you know, just lay on them until they're dead kind of thing. Whereas, like, your magic Moroya type vampires, you got a lot of cool stuff that you can do with this magic, but there's certain things that, like, for instance, there's a mana bomb that you can drop at any point, and it will do a ton of damage in a large field, but of course it will also damage you. So it's for use only if you've got one, like, character out there that's, like, outnumbered or something like that, or you just got, you know, one magic vampire out there, like, kind of going off on her own. So there's, like, different things like that. And, you know, with your necromancer style vampires, you can use your turns to, like, basically bring up a whole bunch of zombies and have them fight for you. And, you know, it's really, really diverse, and I like that. And then on both the world map and the battle map, there are different kind of bonus things that, like, so the on the battle map, there'll be, like, if you stand adjacent to this stone, this is a temple stone of some kind, and if you are on one of these blocks that are suspiciously glowing near it, then you will have an extra bonus to health, or your health will, like, regen, or you'll have better attack, or, like, a certain kind of skill. Like, they always have this, like, paragraph of describing everything. And if you stand there, then you'll get that bonus. And so that actually plays into the strategy, whereas you might try to get all of your warrior characters to stand around all the spots on the extra attack or the extra MP or extra HP, sorry, stone. And then, you know, kind of build your tactics around that. So it's not just like sneaking around a random battlefield. Like, actually the battlefields are pretty complex. And like I said, they have things that give both you and the opponent different ways of getting on top, not just whacking each other with sticks until one's dead. Although of course that is ultimately the goal. And then another thing, and I swear this is going to be the last thing.
Sure.
Is the card system, which they're very precious about, because there's like a 45-minute tutorial where they spend like half of it talking about cards. All the cards are is that they are things that you collect either in battle. You can purchase them every so often. I forget the exact amount of time. I think it's a year. And all they do really is they just... they add something to your characters. They give you an extra ability or something like that. You can play them in battle, and they become, like, because this game is fairly difficult, they become very essential for getting yourself through certain tough situations, such as the campaign, like the Dracul campaign, which has you, the, like, first mission in it, like, you are unable to claim new territory or add units to your party. You get a set amount of units, and you have to get through several battles in order to advance the story. And it was so difficult when I first started that I thought it was a scripted loss, but it's not. You actually have to do it, and that kind of forces your hand into learning all of the, like, different available things and ways that you can, like, level up your characters. And, you know, there's skill trees involved I won't even get into because it's just RPG stuff. Like, there's so much complexity in this. And yet, it all is really, like, you know, it's pretty good and learnable. Like, you know, you can really get into the flow of it. And like I said, the fact that there's a sandbox mode that you completely control the parameters of is extremely useful, because it means you don't have to, like, force yourself to learn, you know, all the complex systems and stuff. You could just ratchet down the difficulty until it's, you know, your level of, like, skill. And then you can kind of more enjoy the just the tactical nature of the whole thing. So the only real complaints I have about the game, for one, like I said, the graphics aren't really going to impress anybody. It basically looks like a fancy board game in the world map. Even at full zoom, you really can't see details on your character. Like, you can't make out a face. It is dark. It's a pretty dark game. So I do recommend, there's a gamma control in the options, and I recommend you play around with that and or your TV settings. Text is tiny. I always have a problem with tiny text, especially on the Switch, because it has a, you know, its screen is a certain size.
No.
So, you know, but, and of course, like, the controls are actually the thing that annoyed me the most, because it utilizes every button in weird combinations. Like, there's four different entire menus that are accessed by pushing any direction on the direction pad. And if you get into that menu, you have to leave that menu before you can do a different thing. It doesn't just, like, smoothly scroll between them. Like, you actually have to back out of what you're doing to do something else. And even though I did play the tutorial religiously, I still would get lost. And I'd be like, which button is it? It's not telling me. It's telling me three different buttons do, but not the button that I need. You know, it was like learning how to use recording software. It was just, I was like, you know, once I learn this, this is going to be so much more fun. But until then, I am really frustrated with my thumbs right now. But anyway, so like I said, that's all to say, it is a PC game that is ported to Switch. And so, you know, it's one of those things. I do kind of wish they would have added some semblance of touch controls, but as far as I can tell, there's nothing. However, like I said, I really appreciate the sandbox mode to help you like learn the game in long form. I like what the where the campaign's going in terms of like that it gives you the storyline through the perspective of all three different kinds of vampire families. So you really get to know these vampires, which is kind of cool. And like I said, you know, it's nice that they give you a skirmish thing where you can just do a quick battle where you actually set up all the units for yourself in the computer and like you can, you know, set it down to the last little detail. The only thing I wish if they had a mode like that is that they had some kind of multiplayer. But there's none. It's strictly one player. And so I'm like, well, if I'm setting up like this skirmish for like 20 minutes and then playing it in five, you know, I don't know. I couldn't see myself doing that all day, but it is a nice way to experiment with different characters and in units and see what everybody can do. Because there's a ton. It is so much stuff for every different kind of character. So this is a game that you will be playing well into your afterlife.
Well, then $40 on it. What do you say?
That was totally worth it. For strategy fans who like strategy RPGs, but they want a little bit more of a kind of, they want more meat in the outside of the battle, like way of doing things. Or if you like RTSs, but you don't like the RT part, like, you know, if you like actually having like all the time to set up everything and like get it the way you want it and then move, you know, more like a board game style. I mean, there's a lot going on in this game that's really interesting, and I really think it's worth picking up and like, you know, checking out. Like I said, it's a little limited on certain things, but that's okay because this game really is all about the brain work, and it's got lots and lots of that. And, you know, like I said, it really does, after you learn all this stuff, feel very satisfying to win. So
cool.
I say it's worth it.
Awesome. Cole, I know you dabbled with this one on Xbox a while ago. Did you have any thoughts on it?
No. I completely, like, zoned out and wasn't even paying attention to what game you guys were talking about. You guys have said so little that involved me tonight that I was just like, do-do-do-do-do-do.
Immortal Realms Vampire Wars.
Oh! You know what? To be perfectly honest, I forgot I even played the game. And that's on me. That's not relative to the game at all. It's just that I played it so long ago, and I play so much that I was just like,
in one ear, out the other.
Yeah, I was like, it's a game. I played it. Okay, I had to look it up to see that I owned it. So,
well, I made an effort to involve you in the conversation. I did my job.
It was definitely me, but just it's complicated.
I just want everyone to know that we're an hour and a half into the show, and we've talked about three games.
Yeah, five games, Joe.
That's kind of why I was falling asleep over here. I got to go to bed in 20 minutes.
All right. So let's chop on these next three games. We only got three more to go. Let's not be here until 1 o'clock, people.
I can't promise anything.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Cornell, I have to homeschool three kids tomorrow.
So the next game we're going to review is Homeschooling Kids, developed and published by the Coronavirus, released on September 4th, 2020, for an indeterminate amount of money.
All right, for real, next game to talk about is called Party Hard 2, developed by Pinochle Games, published by Tiny Build, released September 8th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $19.99. It's 3 a.m. and you just want to get some sleep. Sounds familiar, huh? Welcome back to Party Hard. Stop parties using hundreds of new ways, incidentally destroy a drug syndicate, and save the Earth from an alien invasion. May the chickens be with you. Purnell, huh?
Yes. Now, this one will be quick, but for good reason, because it's a succinct game. So, it's like Joe said, one of the most fantastic game premises, though I'll be a little morbid, is that you are a guy who really wants to go to bed, but those damn young kids won't shut the hell up. So you go kill them. It's just a rational thing to do. So you play as the party hard killer. The idea is that the game places you in a variety of different sandboxes where people are hanging out, throwing parties in costumes, getting high, being real stupid. And you're given a variety of tasks in these respective environments. Depending on the character you choose, you get a weapon. Though at the beginning of the game, you can only choose between two, one being the party hard killer and another one being pretty much the party hard killer, but he's got souped up stats, so he's like easy mode for the game, which is respectable because this game is not easy. it makes you learn the ropes the hard way, which is through lots of dying. So the idea is that you'll show up on a level. The game will say maybe kill these dealers or, you know, plant, you know, I don't know, basically kill these people in a variety of ways. Kill these people in a specific way. Find money, and so on and so forth. It's a variety of different things to do. So your goal is to run around and perform those actions. What are your actions that you can do to make these things happen? Well, at baseball, you have your default weapon. In the main case of the guy, you'll get a knife. So you can use the knife to stab someone to death. You get items that you can find strewn about the map. These are randomly placed throughout the map. And they range from just simple things like beer bottles all the way up to like crazy firearms and the like. Those are what you unlock, but early on it's just simple stuff. And when you find them, you can use them in a variety of different ways. You can say, for example, take a beer bottle and throw it in hopes of distracting somebody or just clocking someone in the head. But if you find gasoline, you can combine the beer bottle with the gasoline to create a Molotov cocktail and then lob that to try to kill somebody.
Sweet.
It's a beautiful game. And the thing about it that's interesting, though, is that what I like is that your main character is not a superhero. He's pretty much a gangly guy who's frustrated. And what that means is that there's a lot of targets on the game that by normal means you can't kill them. Like, if you try to go stab a bouncer, bouncer's going to kick your ass. And that might be the end of the game, depending on how bad it goes. Otherwise, he'll just throw you outside and you got to try again. So in a number of ways, you have to be smart about your kills because you can kill certain guys with your normal melee attack. Other times, if you try to kill a person with your weapon and someone sees you try, they will run off and call the cops, and the cops will rush the party. They are faster than you, and they're invincible, so they will catch you, and it will be over unless you can somehow hide in like a closet or something until they go away, which, again, due to your character's gangly nature, that's easier said than done because there is a run button. But you'll get tired quickly. You're like, well, I guess I'm caught. So there are some cool creative ways to kill guys, though. Like something as simple as stabbing someone when no one's looking because you distracted someone and then hiding the body in a dumpster or something. There's cool stuff like that. But then there's other things like starting a car and having the car run over an entire group of people on the street. Or setting a hookah to explode. Or setting a bomb to blow up. A chem lab exploding. All kinds of cool stuff you can do, depending on what you want to do.
And yeah, I know the first game had, like, insane ways to murder people. My big concern with this game is it made the jump from a 2D game to 3D. How does that work?
So, on the positive, I think it looks nicer. I actually like the 3D view of the game. The downside to it, though, is that some situations will cause you to just kind of suck. And what I say by that, to be more descriptive, is like, let's say, for example, you have a target. That target is dancing on the dance floor. And you're like, I can't go stab them because everyone will see me. And she's clearly out there dancing. What am I supposed to do? You'll think, oh, I know. I'll light this Molotov cocktail and throw it from behind the wall here where no one can see me. It'll hit her. She'll die. I'm solid. However, due to the way the 3D works, where the character's standing up and there's a shadow on the ground and stuff, it's not hard to throw that bottle and miss them, despite the fact that it seems like the reticle is right on top of them, but it's actually behind them. So you'll throw the cocktail, you'll see the fire ignite, and they're still dancing, because that's how much Molly they're on. And you won't even know. It's like, what the hell happened? I threw the cocktail. I hit him. But no, you clearly missed. You just don't realize it. So that's something that you'd have to get used to. But once you do get used to that aspect of aiming at 3D figures, it actually makes the game look nice. I enjoy it. There's also a thing to be concerned about, well, not in a negative, but in a cool way, how they've added more events to the game. So as you're exploring or working with the environment, depending on the stage, weird things might happen to kind of shake up your otherwise typical experience. Reinforcements might show up related to the drug cartel. Sci-fi stuff might happen, like the Terminator might appear from a space portal looking for John Connor and in the process try to kill you. cool stuff like that where, I mean, eventually you'll start to notice them all and know they're coming, or at least at some point know they're coming. But the early aspects of seeing these events start up, I'm like, oh crap, that throws a wrench in these plans. That I think is pretty interesting to get used to. There's also something worth mentioning in regards to how unlocks work in this game. So there are four different categories. I'm not going to go into all of them. It's like basically like Mystic and like Carnage and like Stealth.
Carnage, we know him.
Oh, yeah, he's a cool guy. And all the different goals on a stage relate to one of those four categories. And as you complete goals on stages, whether they be hidden goals or straight up goals that they tell you, you will accrue points in those bars. And for every threshold on the bar, you'll unlock either a new character, because there's two character unlocks, or you will unlock a new item, which will show up on the random, the random assortment of releases that show up on a stage when the level build loads up. So it'll kind of give you incentive to go back to old levels you already completed, because it gives you new ways to kill guys. And it's just kind of fun. I think, honestly, overall, the only thing I can see being a real turnoff for this game, like I mentioned earlier, is the fact that it is a challenge in the sense that it's not hard to screw up. I mean, you might go to stab a guy and you'll kill him and you think you got the perfect crime going. And then out of nowhere, this dude that you did not expect to see you, because he's hanging out behind the dumpsters getting high, spots you, freaks out, runs away. Your guy can't run for shit. So clearly he gets away. Cops come. You've got nowhere to hide. You're caught. And you could be well into the level at this point and get busted, because these levels are not small. They get larger, actually. Some of the early ones are small enough. But as you get into bigger levels, a mistake could cost you big time. Which is, I guess, is kind of why it's nice to get that super jacked up character who's actually can hold his own. But I'm not using him. They don't even give you unlocks for using him. It's solely for progressing the story, which the story is not much to write home about. You're here to do the actual gameplay.
Yeah.
So in that regard, I think you're going to want to deal with the hard knocks to get all the cool unlocks and stuff like that. So, but if you can deal with that for the sake of just having a wild time, you know, doing stupid stuff like calling a giant bear to come in and dance at a party, I think this game is worth your money on the Switch. It's a good pick up and play, boot it up, you know, do one mission or two, put it away, come back and do more. It's a good time. Oh. Also, you have to be content with the idea that you're running around killing people at a party because you can't sleep.
Yeah. But that's kind of, you know, going into it.
That's right. That's the party hard life.
Yeah.
That's the party hard life. You ain't ready to get down. What are you here for?
Indeed. So $20, your official verdict.
I think it's a purchase, hands down. It's a worthy purchase.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Lair of the Clockwork God, developed by Size 5 Games, published by Ant Workshop, released September 4th on Xbox One and Switch for $19.99. A fast-paced point-and-click adventure and an indie platformer in one. Join adventurer Ben and wannabe indie darling Dan in a race against time to stop the apocalypses from happening at the same time. All the apocalypses, all of them, every single one. Chris, what's happening in this game?
So much. Okay, so first thing I want to point out, and this will set the tone for the whole game. So me and one of my friends, who is a game reviewer way before I ever reviewed any kind of game. Anyways, we were talking about it, and we decided that when it comes to like some games, like especially Gen 6 and forward, the more splashes for developers and publishers, like splash screens before you get to start the game, the worse the game, right? So the very first thing that happens when you turn on this game is it does like the developer and publisher splash screens, and then it just keeps doing them. It just keeps adding in more and more companies with increasingly stupid names. And
it's pretty beautiful. There's an achievement on Xbox, I think, for looking at 100 of them.
Yes, I actually got it on the Switch while Tim and Purnell were doing their review. I just had it going and I was looking at it, and it's some brilliant stuff.
Short our reviews were. We were very succinct.
Oh yeah, sure. Shut the fuck up. Companies like ancient racist
designs. But yeah, it's absolutely, that sets the tone for the thing. So Lair of the Clockwork God is an absolute, it's like the pinnacle of what webcomics and indie humorous games and stuff like that from the old point and click games, actually, which would do this, like the Discworld games up until like today, like just a master level of fourth wall breaking, irritating humor.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Very British. They, because I believe these people have to be British. They use so many like references and the language is British anyways. So it's these two guys and they're based on the game's actual writers and designers. And yeah, their adventure is like, so there's the goal of the introductory level that kind of teaches you how to do everything, like the kind of tutorial puzzle, if you will. They're trying to find a flower that cures cancer, specifically colon cancer. And when I first played this game, that was the day that Chadwick Boseman died. And I was like, wow, that's,
man.
I know they did not intend for that to be a thing, but that absolutely...
That's timing, yeah.
That timing, yeah.
Oh, shit.
Anyways, so they it teaches you then how to do the puzzles, and here's how the game plays, is that your one guy, Ben? Oh, yeah, Ben and Dan, that's right. Okay, so Ben is the, like... de facto leader of the group, and he is into puzzle games and puzzle point and click puzzle gameplay. Like, he specifically lists off like a list of games, and it's really funny because, like, you know, this is clearly written by somebody who has played all these games, like, and they have references to those games too. And so his thing is only point and click. He refuses to be dragged by his best friend, who's really excited about becoming an indie darling platformer. And he refuses. So Dan is the indie darling platformer. And the joke is that, you know, because his nose is a different color from the rest of his face. I don't know what that is, really.
I feel don't like get that either.
I felt like it was a dig at Celeste, to be honest. And really, that seems to be his goal. Like, they're making fun of the platformers of today that tell a serious story, because they're like, they make fun of the concept of serious stories. And yeah, it is just like constant chatter between the two, and it's just joke after joke after joke. And they're about like developers, they're about like different kind of games. The first thing that you do is push an indie developer onto some spikes and use his body as a platform to get across to the first puzzle.
Oh my God, that's beautiful.
Yeah. And it's really funny, like, the when you're talking to the indie developer about the game that he's making, and he's all like, it's he's insufferable and all this other stuff. And it's just like, it's wonderful for people who, like, you know, especially for reviewers who have to play like all the different kinds of games. So anywho's, shout outs to Lord of Night 9, by the way, for the raid.
Oh, Lord of Night, really? Why are you coming by here? That's crazy. Thank you, Lord. So,
yeah. Anyways.
I'm not even paying attention. I'm looking at my emails trying to figure out, like, trying to figure out all the information on this game and everything else. And Lord of Night comes in here raiding me with Party of Five, which I was never a fan of that show, Party of Five.
Oh, Jeff Campbell. Yeah. Is she here?
Cute. No, Nev Campbell is not here, unfortunately.
Aww.
But Lord of Night is here, so hi, Lord of Night. Anyway.
Attention. What are you doing? Yeah. Trying to cosplay as me?
Yes. Yes, I
Good
am.
Good
job. So, Lair of the Clockwork.
You don't have curly enough hair yet, though.
So, Shut so up, the way that
Cole,
the game.
That's mean. You don't have any hair.
Me neither.
None of us do, Cole.
I got enough hair for everybody.
If Tim were here, he doesn't either. Oh my God, this show is so bald.
Baldest show on the internet. Okay, so the so basically the core of the gameplay is that you basically take turns. You move Dan around where he can run and jump and attack and jump on things and climb things and all this other stuff, and you go and find the stuff or the switch or whatever it is. In order to allow, no, that's Dan that's doing that. And then, the switch allows Ben to just meander in a straight line towards, the next puzzle. And then you solve the puzzle in a very point and click way by, like, you know, adding items to your inventory, figuring out which item does what, sometimes combining the items, examining them, looking at all the flavor text, having the conversations, all this stuff. You do that, and then your reward is typically something that you can then hand back to Dan so that he can do different platforming. Your first mission is, of course, to unlock the double jump. And I think we've talked about this before, is that I gauge platformer quality on how soon you get the double jump. And the fact that it's in the tutorial makes it ironically amazing. it's all about, like, figuring out what all of the different ways that you can use battery acid to get where you need to go, and all while practicing your double jump and trying not to die from random spikes, and listening to these two guys just prattle on and on about whatever they want. And by the way, there is an option where you can turn down their banter.
Oh, why would you do that?
You would not, because this game is so charming with the jokes. I love every joke. Once you get past that, then you get, you know, you find the flower. And we don't know whatever happens to their friend with cancer. At least I don't. I haven't played that far yet. But when they get back to London, they find that every apocalypse has happened. And after solving a few more puzzles, you gain the ability to have Ben ride on Dan's back. And so then you can combine the characters so you don't have to switch between them anymore. You can just throw Ben at the problem and then he'll solve it. and then you can go back to it. And one of my favorite things in this game, and this is one of those kind of moments where you really can tell that a game, like, actually pays attention to quality and setting the stage. There's a long running sequence where you have to outrun a disaster, and in the background, you get to see the nature of every apocalypse at once. So, like, there will be, like, a dinosaur going by, and then this giant, like, robot foot stomps down, and then tentacles start coming up, and there's a Goodyear blimp, and, you know, all of this stuff starts happening, and you just get to watch this awesome pixel art spectacle while you're, like, actually playing the game. And I'm like, before you, like, get to your next series of puzzles, and I just love that. And so, yeah, this game is just an utter joy to play as the actual game. And then there's two more things I want to talk about with it. One is that they include in the game, after the infinite splash screens, for one, actually, I like that they actually have an update screen on the title screen so that they can tell you when there's an update. Like, they describe a bug that's in the game, which is still there, sadly, but they say they're working on the patch right now. And there's another thing that is in here, is Devil's Kiss, which is a full-on visual novel that describes the way that these two characters met each other. And you get to play through that, and it is, like, it's fully, like, a Rattalaika-style, like, you know, visual novel. And it's hilarious. It is so good. You want to choose every single option because they're all so ludicrous and bad. And again, it's making fun of the entire thing of visual novels, and it's making fun of other games, too. And it's just, like, I played through the whole visual novel last night as well. You get just a free visual novel with it, and it's legitimately hilarious. And so, yeah, you get that in it as well. There's a store that's not up yet. So apparently there's going to be some DLC later on down the road. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about is this thing has a ton of actual accessibility options. So,
oh, you got Cole's attention.
Yeah. So, the accessibility options, you got dyslexic friendly font, as well as a slider for the font size. You can change the contrast of the font to be black, white on black or black on white. You can actually watch the speech type up. You can toggle whether the text shakes or not, like, you know, basically the personality. It's got a colorblind mode. You can take out the camera noise. You can take out the screen shake. And there's a platforming assist slider that the more, you know, that helps with the platforming sections. And, you know, of course, the more you slide it up, the more you're assisted on the actual platforming section and can just get back to the point and click puzzle. Considering one of my best friends is a point and click, like, aficionado, but she hates platforming, like, that would be an option for her. So
that's pretty cool.
Dang. So much good stuff. Oh, and the music
is actually really awesome.
Yeah, the music is fantastic. It is so deadpan serious about being like a serious emotional game until like the title screen rolls by and then it just goes into a funk party immediately. And I'm just like, holy geez, man, the soundtrack on this thing. This is a great game. I dare say, like, they took two genres that they're 100% trying to take the piss out of, and they mastered them.
Nice.
Like, and then on top of that, you get a fun visual novel. Like, I want to, like, seek out the other games in this series, because apparently this is the third one. And, yeah, I'm definitely going to be spending more time with old Ben and Dan.
Nice. So, $20, your official verdict.
Oh, please get this one. It is so good. Awesome. I mean, like, if you hate point and clicks, I mean, it's not the hardest point and click in the world, but, you know, it will exercise your brain a little bit. However, it's worth it. And everything is ludicrous. And if you like toilet humor, that's all over the place. There's 1,000 dick jokes just in the
Sweet.
Intro.
Sweet.
I mean, it is.
Point and clicks.
Huh?
How can you hate point and clicks?
I don't know. Some people do. I don't.
Point and clicks or point and dicks?
Dang.
Oh. That is the kind of joke they would make in this game.
Lord and I asking Xbox only. No, it is on Xbox and Switch. No word on a PlayStation release, maybe in the future, though.
Yeah, I played it on Switch. There's nothing real special on the Switch. There's no touch screens or anything like that. Again, I would have liked that. Oh, the only one criticism I have of it is it does, the point and click version section does have a little bit of an irritating control scheme, but I got used to it and it's fine. It's just you actually have to play the game claw style because you have to move the looking cursor laser pointer with your right thumb, but then also you have to push B, which is not close to that stick, with your finger in order to actually access something. And then, you know, you have to bring up a menu with the directional pad, and they could have done something to make it more intuitive, but whatever.
Yeah, especially given that they had all the accessibility controls, that seems a little weird that they pushed that.
Exactly. Yeah. They could have, I really wish they would have utilized the touchscreen on this one. Apart from that, it's like near perfect. So
cool.
Yeah.
All right. One final game to talk about tonight is called Beat Beat, developed and published by Generic Games, released August 25th on Steam Early Access for $12.99. Beat Beat is a rhythm platformer with vaporwave aesthetics and funky future beats. Groove your way through arcade style levels that bring home the feel of those big arcades you always used to see in the movies. Beat Beat the game. Pernell, tell us about it.
Now, this will be a quick review.
Bullshit.
I'll prove it right now. Beat Beat is a game where it is essentially a rhythm game that is also a platformer. The concept is you are a square in a one-screen arena. As the song starts to play on the game, you are capable of running, jumping, and wall jumping. Also a slight double jump. As the music plays, you will see circles show up on the screen with an arrow inserted in them. And a circle that's kind of outside of the main one that kind of comes in to line up with the circle itself. This is all done to the beat of the music. By the time the outer rim of the circle lines up with the main circle, you need to be inside of it and able to press the button on the, you know, cross pad, or I guess the arrow keys, to trigger the note. This is essentially the concept behind the game. You are jumping between platforms to chase after notes that are in tune with the music to trigger them. Sometimes it's really simple. Just run from left to right. Hit the note, then hit the note. But then it gets a little complicated sometimes. You might find yourself having to jump across three chasms and then wall jump up a corridor, then jump across two platforms again, and then wall slide down to the bottom, all while hitting notes on the way down and on the way up. It has to be pretty tough at times. Also, there's also hold notes, too, where you'll sometimes have to, like, just hold the button down, and while you're doing so, the square will actually move along a track and get deposited somewhere when the hold note is completed. And there's also a mashed buttons, like a wild man crazy pants section, where you jump into it and just mash the arrow keys until the game says it's okay with you stopping. You get points for that. At the end of the level, they grade you based on the accuracy of your rhythm, how well you did. And then after you do that, you sometimes unlock additional songs. The interface, or rather the UI, is pretty nice looking for being the kind of game it is. It's not going to blow your socks off or anything like that. but I like the fact that the game loads up to what is essentially like a PC desktop, and you select folders on the desktop to select stages to play. And as you unlock new stages, essentially new icons inside the different folders. That is literally what the game is. What do I feel of it? I actually found it enjoyable. I do wish the double jump had a higher jump, like the second jump specifically. And it takes getting used to working with the wall slides and the wall jumps when you're also trying to hit notes to the beat that falls within your jump or the jump or slide pattern. So you'll be working on that. But aside from that, the game itself actually plays in an enjoyable way. And I think I'm already a big fan of rhythm games in themselves. So the idea of a platform rhythm game just speaks to me. The only thing that I wish that this game did, though I guess it would be hard to do something like that, would be to rather than have it be one screen where you just jumped around that screen as the notes appeared, it'd be cool if some of the levels were side-scrolling and you actually were just running through the level like a Rayman Origin, or sorry, like a Rayman Legend stage, which were music-based levels.
Nah, those were cool.
Yes, they freaking were. I love those things. But this game is totally in that vein where if they had side-scrolling levels, that could totally work. Of course, it would need more. It'd probably be helpful to put more bells and whistles on the graphics to pull that off too. But I'll be honest, if it was side-scrolling with squares jumping in circles, I'd still have a damn good time because it's ultimately about the experience, not necessarily the paint, the colors of paint that you splash around the experience. So the biggest thing, I guess, that could be a question, of course, is that of the music. The music I didn't have a big issue with, but I will also say there weren't a ton of tracks that played in the game that had me go, oh, I'm tapping my foot to this. Let me redo this level, even though I already got an S on it, because I want to hear the music again. It was serviceable. It wasn't bad, but it also wasn't clicking for me. And what that's ultimately saying, it's not saying that the music is bad, it's just that it might not have been to my taste, which leads to the idea that come in knowing that you'll be playing a music game, which means that you may or may not like music in it, but still give it a chance because the gameplay itself is already there.
Sounds good.
It is good. I didn't even say. I think it's a buy.
Yeah, I guess I should have asked that.
Also worth noting that for someone might be like, well, Perno, what about the graphics? You should be saying more about the graphics. You should be trashing the graphics or whatever. One of my favorite games that I reviewed in the last couple of years that I was unexpectedly enjoyed was a game called Flat Heroes on the Switch. Flat Heroes is a great game, and you are literally controlling a square dodging circles. That's the entire freaking game. And I still play it to this day, just for that rush. So, a music game where you're controlling a square, hitting notes to circles, I have no qualms with that, because the gameplay experience as a whole is still enjoyable.
Yeah, as long as the game's fun, I don't give a shit what it looks like.
Agreed.
Like, I'll take Chrono Trigger over Final Fantasy XV any day of the week.
Hear freaking hear to that. Still, like, good lord, I actually started playing Chrono Trigger again just last week.
Speaking of Chrono Trigger, this has nothing to do with Chrono Trigger, but Cole's dropping 100 bits in chat, presumably to make us shut the fuck up.
We gotta keep talking to up the ante, come on.
We gotta wrap this up. This has been long enough. We've spent 2 hours on six goddamn... That's... This is getting out of hand. This is just like the length of
an Avengers film.
Oh, jeez. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
I have more to say after the credits.
Yeah, good enough.